Hey you, thanks for tuning into the Waiting List podcast. I'm Long Long.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Jacqueline, and we are three watch friends with a healthy obsession for watches.
So sit back and relax with us while we chat with collectors, industry giants, and share some good vibes. If I got 10 Hong Kong dollars for every time I got asked about the price of a watch, I think not just me, a lot of listeners would have amassed a considerable amount of money to go towards their next watch purchase. And how about that guy, that watch guy that we all know, that seems to know every price of a watch in the market and seems just to pluck it out of thin air? Oh yeah, that's trading for 300K Hong Kong. You know, we all know someone like that. And if you don't, you just haven't been in the game long enough. And for the rest of us, we all pretend to be somewhat savvy when someone asks us the question, as it's like now, it's become like watch snobbery, just like watch references. If you don't know or have an idea of the market prices, you're clearly not in it enough and you're not really taken seriously as a watch enthusiast. But for us, yeah, it's scroll Chrono 24 and take an average. It seems kind of stupid because it's such a regular topic in watch conversations, but why isn't there a reliable way of knowing the market price of a watch, just like you do a stock? Well, that's why we have Giovanni, the co-founder of a platform called EveryWatch, to help us answer that. So Giovanni, why has it taken so long for such a platform to exist?
Hi, everyone. I'm glad to be on the podcast. Thank you so much for inviting me on. And I believe the reason, the main reason is that it's very, very hard to create. And it takes a lot of means and a lot of technological knowledge to create such a platform and to aggregate the data in a proper way. And watch data is very complicated. We've identified about 250 features that actually contribute in the change of price in a watch. So think about, you know, the numerals on the dial. You could have breguet, stamped, or applied. You could have diamond markers. Are they baguette? Are they round? Same thing with the case, with the lugs. So we have so many, and let's not talk about even the, you know, sets of the watch. So box and papers and certificates and all the different nuances. So we all know there's so much complication. And so it's very hard to actually give a rough estimate of the price of an actual watch, especially when we get into vintage, when we get into more particular references, and you would have to know pretty much everything about every little detail of every little watch. That's why you have experts of Rolex, of different brands, and even experts of models to some degree right now. And so that's why, you know, I believe it's taken so long, and that's where every watch comes in to clear the doubts as much as possible and to give enough information.
Suddenly had a thought about, if you had to predict the future price of a watch and the trend, like if it's going up, down, do the kind of people that wear the watch affect this? Okay, for example, Nike was cool at one point until everybody was wearing Nike sneakers, and then it wasn't that cool. So then, you know, would the kind of people that all want to wear a certain reference of Rolex change the price?
I don't believe so. You know, it's more of a, I believe that it's to up until today, the price of watches is mainly dictated by trends, as you said, and what pretty much dealers and auctioneers pick up from their different clients and how they feel the market. But there's no really one source of data, actually fact-based, that tells you, well, these are the facts. Here is the analysis on the volume, just like in a stock market, as Daniel mentioned. So you analyze the volume, that's how trading happens, right? So you analyze the volume, then you analyze what we do it through auction pricing. So what actually somebody paid for a watch, and you relate it to the volume on the marketplace, on the market, dealers, and et cetera. And so then you can take an educated guess, and you can even take an educated guess on where the price will be going in the future, right? So it's basically, it comes down to supply and demand, I believe. So we all know the baseline of pretty much the production or the supply of certain watches. Then it comes down to how many are in the market, how many people are looking for it. And therefore, you know, the result is the price, and the price changes. But I don't think, as you mentioned, the people that do have it do influence the price. I mean, they can in a way. People tend to gravitate towards the coolness. So if somebody, some cool character or cool friends is wearing that particular watch, you know, it might spread to a circle. But to be a global trend, you know, it takes much more. So I believe it's hard.
Okay. Dan, isn't this your part where you're going to be like, have they been on the podcast? Have we mentioned this brand?
Well, I just want to say, I'm probably getting there quickly because, you know, a lot of people, they seem to blow up or they seem to do really well after they've been on this podcast. So I'd like to negotiate their options in your company before that happens, all right? Anyway, joking aside, this is your... platform, tell me about what makes your platform better at doing what we just said about market pricing. I really, really want to know, like, well, I think it's important now for even for your company to say, why would she believe you on market prices?
So first of all, everything that we use for analytical purposes and statistics is on the platform. So once you have, of course, there's a subscription-based model. So if you are on the premium plan, you're able to see pretty much every data point that goes into our analytics. So that's super transparent. First of all, we don't sell watches. We're not a marketplace. We don't do auctions. You cannot bid through us. We just redirect you to the provider, and therefore we're super objective. We want to keep our objectivity even in future plans. So first of all, we're completely neutral, right? We don't have agendas and we don't have any type of bias. The second thing is that we take the data from a huge amount of sources. So as of right now, more than 300 auction houses worldwide. Just as a note, the database goes back to 1989. So we're also uniquely positioned to give more than 30 years track record of data. And long to go back to your point before, if you want to take an educated guess on the trend of a watch, the longer the track record, the better you can take assessments, right? So if we look at a 2499, for example, we just did it recently, they appreciated in price 2000% in the last 30 years on average. So quite impressive. And you could say that that's a sound investment even at today's prices, right? So first of all, transparency. Again, everything is on our platform. We have more than 400,000 auction results. So what somebody paid for a watch on file. And on top of that, we aggregate data from over 180 marketplaces and dealers worldwide. So first of all, differentiator is the amount of data. Second, transparency. You can check out any piece of data that we use in our analytics directly into our platform. Of course, you won't be able to see the agglomerate picture, but looking by one, let's say you can see the data. And because of the vastness of the data that we track and the sources that we track, we're actually able to give at least a few data points on pretty much any watch out there, even if they are uber rare or anything like that. So through our My Collection feature, for example, we're able to give a valuation for a Moon's watch up to a Patek 2499 with a black dial, for example. So really the whole spectrum from a few hundred dollars, our cutoff is $300, by the way, we don't take anything below that, up until, you know, many millions.
Okay, so you talk about data and you say you have a lot of data. So naturally you have kind of mentioned it on the next question is, well, where do you get the data? How is reliable that data? You mentioned 300 auction houses, but what about non-auction houses? Because not all transactions are done through auction houses.
Correct. So again, other than the auction houses, we do cover about 180 dealers and marketplaces. That includes the whole Chrono 24. We do a lot of data cleaning. So for example, we don't take any listing that's listed as price on request, as we cannot verify the reality of the listing at the end of the day, if the watch is actually there. We're working on that to make sure that we'll be able to portray the listings that are actually real and they are price on request. But for now, we decided to keep the data clean and cut it off. And my co-founder is a fund, a tech fund called Naker Capital. That's been very active in tech for the past 20 years, tech, AI. So it's not really a buzzword of the last few years, but we actually do have a lot of real knowledge on tech, and we know how to do things, how to treat data, and how to enhance it. And so I believe this gives us a real advantage into creating such platform. And again, you asked me in the beginning, why has it taken so long? And I guess also a reason why it's probably the right people didn't try to do it yet.
Okay, I want to ask a question.
Okay, like, go semi-related to that. Because I don't really know your background. So what was the motivation to even make this platform?
Correct. So my background is apart from watches. So I'm a biomedical engineer specialized in biotech. I've been collecting watches ever since I was a teenager. And through school, you know, I've had a certain budget and I wanted to experience different watches. So I started training watches a little bit. So I also experienced, you know, the face of the dealer, let's say, that it's really hard to price watches sometimes. Also throughout, you know, during the COVID boom or right after, it was very hard to track prices on a daily basis and to know really how to price your watch, what is a fair price. And at the end of the day, everybody seems to do it by, okay, I'll take the lowest listing on Chrono 24 in my country with similar feature, and I'll just say my watch is cheaper. You know, that should be an automatic sell. So that's what everybody's aiming at, right? But you never know, especially on the rarer watches side of things, you never know if there's actually volume. So are these watches selling at all? You know, even if it's cheaper than the average, are these selling? Like, is there actually a market for this watch? So these are all questions that were completely unanswered. And also doing research for, like, let's say you go on Chrono 24, which is the, you know, biggest platform, as we all know, for marketplace-wise. So you're looking for a watch, you don't find it because it's rare enough. Now you need to look at maybe the auction houses. Okay, you'll go singularly to Christie's, to Sotheby's, to Phillips, to Monaco Legend, to Bonhams, et cetera, et cetera. And then you're going to go to your favorite dealer's website to see if maybe he has it in stock. And you're going to move on from that, right? So basically, it's really, really hard to get to a point where you have scanned the market. It was really hard to get to a point where you can say, okay, I've scanned the market, I've seen everywhere, and this watch, the cheapest one in the best condition, is in this place, and that's where I'm going to go transact. And that's, you know, you were missing completely a tool that would empower you to make the best most informed decision that you could make in your case. You know, that could be, you could be looking for rarity, of course, not only price and quality of the watch and different factors, but you didn't have a place to scan the market.
Okay.
Completely.
Talking about scanning the market, you've mentioned 180 dealers. I'd like to know, is that globally? And then, because there's a global trends, like there's global, like as much as it's clear, there's like a general price. It does differ across like different regions. So what price are you offering? You know, when you put on your, are you offering like a scale, like an auction house estimate between this and this, you know, because I think it is different in locality. The other thing is, you mentioned Chrono 24, like, how do you know if those listings are real? How do you know if those listings are actually transacted prices?
So as I mentioned before, we cannot verify that they are transacted prices. Therefore, we mainly use the marketplace data and the market data, even from dealers, right? Because most of them, they don't want to share what was the end transaction price, right?
Yeah.
So how do we use the marketplace data? So you could assume that if a watch is in the market for X time and then it's not anymore, you could assume that it got sold, right? So we have intricate ways to find out if the watch is re-uploaded under another listing that's pretty much the same from the same person, etc. So we do count those out. But otherwise, you could assume that that watch has been sold or, you know, it's not for sale anymore, let's say. So we do use this type of data mainly for volume indication and to understand, let's say, difference in prices. So the up and downs, right? Because auction data is seasonal. So you will come to May, let's say Cartier, right? You have a lot of Cartiers in the $3,000 to $5,000 range throughout the year, which are, you know, the baseline, the mass production. Then you come to you know, Geneva auctions, Monaco auctions, and Hong Kong and New York, and you get all the big pieces. So the average or the median, that we use the median to avoid you know, outliers, but it gets skewed in a way because those high end sellers, they don't appear in the market in other times. While in the marketplace, you pretty much have a range. So you have from the cheaper to the cheaper options to the most expensive. And so it's a better way, more efficient to track like up and downs daily or monthly, let's say. So that's how we use that data. But at the end of the day, you want to relate that to what somebody's paying for that watch and an actual factual data point like that. And that's how we interconnect the two things. So whenever you're looking at a watch on our platform, the information we give you is the median price at auction in the past 12 months. You also see how many watches sold and you see the median at auction. You see the latest sales price. So the most recent sale of that preference of that specific watch, and you see the auction range. And then for the marketplace, you see again, the median and the range. So you can see from the cheapest to the most expensive and what's the median price. And then we also analyze further the auction data to give the unsold rate. So you understand how liquid is that watch? What is the trading? Again, does it get sold often or goes unsold very often? So there might not be such a market for it. And does it sell above estimate, within estimate, below estimate? So we do a full analysis of all the lots that have been sold in the last 12 months. And we divide it in these categories. So you can kind of get an idea if this is overachiever and what is the trend on this watch, going back to future value, and to actually analyze current value. And then, of course, you can see one by one this listing. So everything is clickable and you can see each list, each sale, and you can see the pictures in high resolution. So you can see, okay, maybe this watch wasn't such in great condition. This one was missing box and papers. And so once you go to that level, you go a level deeper. But depending on how much work you want to put in, you can get to a very specific answer on the price.
Just before you came on, me and Dan were talking about what we personally are buying, hope to buy. And then we kind of concluded, let's say for Dan, you just stick with vintage Patek, and then many years later, you won't regret it. So are there very clear patterns that you see just from like working on your app and entering data and looking at trends? What are the surprising patterns and what are the ones that are like very obvious? For example, the obvious one being vintage Patek seems to hold its value.
Correct. So on the vintage Patek, and we also are seeing that the watches that over time tend to do the best in the market are on a specific case size range.
Okay.
That's usually with some, let's say, exceptions from 34 to 36 and 36 to 40. It's really the ideal size. Then you have a few outliers. For example, you know, the Patek 5070 is 42 and some of the RMs are bigger and they do very well. But or some Cartiers like the Crash, you know, are smaller. But there are specific reasons why those watches are special and they try, they are on a very good trend. So the obvious is that Cartier, Piaget, and this type of watches really overperformed in 2023. And that's actually factual data that we can show and we can back the trend, right? Everybody has this feeling, oh, they've been doing great. You see a lot of interaction towards it. Mm-hmm. But through our platform, you actually can consolidate and understand this. One other obvious trend I would say is that yellow gold is really booming. Been doing great in 2023, much more than 2022, for example. But that's pertaining more to, let's say, elegant classic watches than sports watches.
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay.
Wait, what about gem sets?
I think for the most part, they are trending a bit down in general. But I feel like this is a very specific discussion that changes so much on a specific watch. For example, recently I was shown, I don't know if you've ever, if it ever happened to you, but I was shown a GMT with diamond lugs and the stone bezel. And next to it, a Saru. And the Saru was the more recent one, and the GMT was the a bit older. Let's say the Saru was 2015, 16, and the other one was 2007, 2008, early one. And you can clearly see by holding them into your hands that the older one, the stones are such better quality. It's so evident when you turn them into light. So I would say that it's very especially with stones, I think you need to see it in the flesh. And even between two examples that are of the same reference and same time, you could find one that's better looking for some reason than the other one, because stones are so unique. So I think I would say this is a very subjective topic, and it really depends on the watch.
Okay. I wanted to ask about are the trends cyclical? So does it go 10 years, small watch sizes are popular again, or every 10 years, yellow gold is popular again?
That's a good question. I don't have actually a very good answer to this. I haven't looked into it, to be fair. But
I
think
up and running for 4 months, right?
Sorry?
You've only been up and running for 4 months, right?
Yeah, we've been working on it for 2.5 years, but we've been launched to the public for 4 months. Yes, okay. Correct.
Right. Oh, I have another question. So, I would understand why I would use this app, but I want to know who are the majority of the end users, and then who were you trying to design it for?
So every watch is for everyone, really. So I believe we have done a good job at designing features for, let's say, the more beginner user. So let's say someone is trying to buy their first watch, and maybe to them, a consistent budget is $10,000-$15,000, let's say. And it's significant to them, maybe because they are in a certain age range or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they really want to get the best deal they can. Right, maybe they know the watch they want to buy, or maybe they don't know so much and they want to buy a Submariner. They don't know which one. There's so much choice, there's so many references. Uh-huh. Right. So we've designed a feature which allows you to compare watches and compare all the features of these watches, so you can see where they've been sold, what is the condition, you can stack the price against one another, and the seller, and all the different features. So you can see the size and, maybe the bezel material or the case material. So you can kind of understand what the main differences are. And so this is a feature that we thought for, let's say, more beginner users, that allows them to compare watches from many, many providers all over the world, and to really find what the best deal is at the end of the day. And this is all supported by our analytics that really guides on price, let's say. And then on the more advanced side of things, of course, you could look at macro trends. We have an analytics section that's more on the general market. And so you can see things like you were asking, for example, trends on case materials, on dial type and colors, so material and colors. What's the auction house that's doing the best if you want to consign a watch? Maybe you want to choose who's performing best against, or you want to see what the top performing brands are. Maybe you want to see some watches of those brands for this time, and maybe you want to go and buy something that's less quoted, let's say. So I really believe something else that you can do on the platform is actually check serial numbers. So you can write the name of the brand.
No way.
And then the serial or case number, whatever, better without any dots, commas, and signs, just a pure numeral. And you can see where, if they've sold at auction before, where, and you can check the pictures and see, all the differences over time. So if the watch has been restored or anything changed, or is it pristine, just like it was 20 years ago. So it's, and that's a feature that, dealers, auctioneers, are using a lot. So I believe we have a big spectrum. Yeah.
This technology is so cool. I wish you would do like every car and like every jewelry, every bag. Dude, if you could put in like a car serial, like numbers and car plates and whatever, and all these things, you could find out if the seller is really, you know, telling you the truth. You can find out a lot of things.
That's true. I'm sure there's something, especially in the car space, that thing going on. Cool. But yeah, the technology is flexible for sure.
So I want to go back to my question about dealers. You didn't tell me where the dealers coming from and the regional differences on, you know, so I want to know, like, let's say, for example, because you're from Italy. So if all the dealers are from Italy, well, that's a bit skewed, isn't it? You know, so yeah. I want a bit more transparency on that.
Right. So we try to be as global as we can. And we try to, so we have a whole team that works on prioritizing the sources that we add to the website. So the dealers and et cetera. So one of the things, of course, is regionality. We try to spread out and have as many as possible from different locations. The other thing is we try to differentiate and try to bring very quality dealers that might have not so many watches. I'm sure you know dealers that have a stock of 10 watches, but they're really good. And they're always really picky about what they do and what they pick. And those are really important to be to us. It's really important to have these guys on the platform because we provide value to the users. So it's really like there's a whole team that handles the prioritization and we also look at modern versus vintage dealers of independence. So we try to bring pretty much everything and try to have a complete window. I wouldn't know the exact partition between where the most dealers are, to be fair, but I can tell you we have quite some from Asia, so Japan, Hong Kong, Singapore. We have many from US, we have many from all over Europe. On the auction house side, actually, we even have some mainland China, we have some New Zealand, Australia, we have South Africa, even. So it's really spread out, I would say.
I gotta ask though, why does a dealer want to work with you and give you that data? What's in it for them?
So this is a platform that's very targeted towards watch buyers. And one other feature that's very useful is you can set up a safe search. You can save a search basically with any parameters that you want. We also have a keyword field. So let's say you're looking at Rolex Daytona, you want to look for a Paul Newman, you want to look for a John Player Special, something to that level, that degree of depth. You can save the search and we alert you anytime a new watch that matches those filters. It's either upcoming at auction and new one is uploaded to the market, or once they get sold from auction, about the auction results. We send this once a day. So a dealer potentially, once you have a certain watch, you go directly to the inbox of the client. By the way, we have 90%, over 90% opening rates on these type of notifications. You go directly to the inbox of this person that has set up specific filters to look at all the new watches that come out in the market. So a very interested and potential buyer, right? So it's a very efficient way to reach customers. And I believe that's a very compelling reason for all the dealers to work with us.
Mm. Lama, I just sent you something on your WhatsApp, right? Which is $24.99 report master guide that they do based on research. So just open it up. I think it's like pretty freaking awesome, to be honest. Saves so much time that there is basically a report showing the pricing over years, different materials, production numbers, case, Vichy and Wenger cases, obviously the four series of it, like basically all the information that you need to get going about 90%. I would say, I haven't read it fully, probably even close to 100%. It's pretty much there with photos. Pretty crazy that can be done.
So actually I wanted to ask, when I asked about the end user, is this a plan for you guys to eventually provide this service to the finance industry? I mean, because right now, if you read those reports, you know how like all the investment banks have these reports yearly? Yeah, it's detailed and everything, but it's not detailed to this extent. And there's a lot of watch funds and luxury funds, right?
So that's, of course, a very interesting proposition. And we've been in talks with relevant parties about this. By the way, we were mentioned on the Morgan Stanley report.
You can... I will collect the fee.
Okay. On the auction fee. So they've used our data. Yeah, for sure. We are very interested to work on the financial side of things. And I believe we're best suited to support this type of players. You know, even a lot of family office of that handle the collections of important investors or anyways, wealthy people have reached out and are using the service and really enjoy it. So,
that's so cool.
So this report that you sent me, which is basically the skinny on the $24.99, is that common access? Like, can I just put, oh, I don't know, Brigade Type 20, and it give me all the information that I need?
To that level of depth, like Sirius and all of that? Yeah. No, not yet, at least. But okay. I believe in time we'll get there. So we're working on, let's say, a series of, we'll go down the line of important watches and try to do the best job we can. By the way, we're actually publishing a full report. Yeah. We're actually publishing a full report on the 2499 that's even more detailed, that will have all the serial numbers of all the 2499 ever gone at auction and how many times each one has been at auction, where was this, what was the selling price, and etc. So okay. even more detail.
So this article, like, it says it's written by you, right?
Yes.
Okay. And obviously through all this research and writing these articles, I also like just want to know, like, what's your favorite watch?
Yeah, good question.
After seeing it in person,
yeah,
I would say that 2499 first series with a Vichy case is the most beautiful watch I've ever seen and put on my wrist.
Yeah, that's not original.
Right. So my next question, monetization. How do you make?
Right. So mainly two ways. So one is, of course, subscription. So to access all the auction results and more, some of the more in-depth analytics and reports, you will need a premium subscription. Right now, it's priced at $50 a month or $500 a year, US. We still have the free plan. So basically, on the free plan, you'll be able to see all the listings from all the dealers that we put together. You have analytics that's basically a little less in depth on price guiding, but and you still have the possibility to set alerts just based on the market and not auctions, and you're able to see still all the watches upcoming at auction, but you won't be able to see actually where and when the watches will be auctioned. So I would say it's still a very valuable and compelling service. You still can use the compare watch feature, and the collection, it's the valuation that we give, it's only based on marketplace, not auctions. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little less specific, more on asking price rather than actually a sales price, a real price. And on the general analytics, you're capped at 2 years before. So you cannot see the latest, basically.
Okay.
And sorry, the second part of the monetization is a referral fee from the dealers we work with, dealers and auction houses we work with. So whenever we send, we take care of the tracking. Whenever we send actually a qualified buyer that ends up buying a watch, there's no fixed fees whatsoever. Whenever we send actually a buyer, the dealer makes money or auction house makes money. We take a little cut that's more than reasonable. And that's the second part of the business model.
Like, in terms of that second part of the business model, right? Will you have a limited number of dealers you work with? Because it's kind of like, the more data you have with more dealers, then the more accurate your predictions are, and all your work is. But at the same time, you know, managing more dealers, is that, because if I'm a dealer, I'm thinking, well, it's great when I'm the only dealer here selling this kind of niche product, right? But if I'm then competing against all these other dealers, right, what is the point? You know, like, it's become saturated again. So how do you navigate that?
So the way we're working on that, and it's live for the auction houses, not yet for the dealers, but we're working on it, is to actually highlight the each differentiator for each dealer. So let's say you're a dealer and you specialize in new vintage watches, specifically, I don't know, a certain array of brands, right? So whenever you're buying such watch, you will read that this dealer is specialized in this field. And so you're going to the best specialist. Think about it in medicine, you know, you go to the specialist, right? And so we're kind of integrating this type of data in the platform such that we highlight the qualities of each dealer. And so we bring out, you know, the best for them. And at the same time, you know, there's some dealers that give 2 years of warranty instead of one, and this type of things that are valuable. And, you know, more often than not are considered in the pricing of said dealer. And so we do want to highlight also, or if the dealer does verification or not, these are all things that matter when you're buying a watch. And so we want to, that's what we want to highlight basically.
So just a side note, like, I'm just thinking, like, if I had a conversation over dinner with you, are you the kind of person that just picks up, where'd you get that data from? Where'd you get that from? You know, because that would be like very tiring, like a dinner conversation. Like, have you had that complaint? Like, can you just like shut up and let me just say what I want to say? Have you, like, are you one of those people now because it's your work?
I would say no. No, I don't like to be annoying.
Right. So the second thing you said was the subscription fee, which is you've got like one which is for free. And then if you want to get basically more information, then you subscribe. How many users have you got now? And is that where your target was at this point? Like 4 months in, like where were your targets and how are you doing in comparison to those targets?
So I won't disclose the exact number of users. Still have a good amount of users that are on a free trial. Like when we opened up, we just had quite some users on the free trial of Pro, of premium membership. So quite a good amount of users are still there. I think we're doing quite well. And especially on the premium side, I would say we've had a better than expected retention for the people that, you know, already subscribed that we could see.
I actually think the premium side would do better than the free, because it's kind of like, I know this is such a like shitty example, but it's like, let's say you use Yahoo Finance and you're like trying to read something and then you go, okay, this article is just useless and you have to pay to get some kind of useful information. So in the end, you're just like, okay, just pay.
Yeah. I hope people will reason that way.
You're in the finance. Do you pay a lot for information?
Yeah. I pay, yeah. It's just like the way you love to read the news, right?
How much did it cost? Yeah.
I don't know. Just every app that I use, I will always pay. I mean, the only one that I don't pay that everyone gets mad about is YouTube. But every single thing where I feel like I can learn something, I will pay.
Well, I just crossed that bridge and bought it, like premium YouTube. Yeah.
I know your life has changed.
Right? Yeah. That's you can't go back.
That's exactly the, I'm also a YouTube premium member, and that's exactly, you know, the feeling that I would love to give to users. Like, you try premium and then you never want to go back to premium. But I would tell you something, you know, you're paying, let's say, $50 a month or $500 a year, right? Mm-hmm. You get a deal on a watch. How easy is to save $500 by using the service?
Okay, yeah, that's good that sales talk for your platform. I'll give you that.
That is a good selling point, I have to say. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you want to give that feeling to people that use your platform, yeah, just flood it with ads on the free one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
But... every click they go in, add every click.
Okay. That I would say, I, you know, for as much as we want premium members, I think that's so frustrating. And
yes,
we want to treat our users well, even there if they are on the free plan. And so I would say no ads for the foreseeable future.
Good.
What is the? I have another question. What is the end goal with this whole thing?
Good question. So, you know, it's really to bring clarity and unify the market, which I think it hasn't been until times, or maybe it's not yet fully. And to really, you know, you guys are collectors, so you know this better than I do, or as well as I do, that people, you know, when they're not so experts, such experts about watches, they are very scared by going in the secondary market and buying a watch, especially on the vintage side, right? So the end goal would actually be to give, I mean, I don't want to aim too high to say, you know, a boutique-like experience, but just so when you go and buy a new watch, but it's to really empower consumers to transact with a certain level of confidence and comfort on the secondary market.
Okay.
Okay. Can I ask, just on subscriptions alone, like, is it realistic to get to a certain number where you are actually very profitable without, you know, because I just think, you know, a lot of making money in watches is selling watches, isn't it? Like, and so, but then once you sell watches, it feels like you're not neutral anymore. So is that something you're going to stay kind of true to?
Yes.
Or are you actually thinking I'm going to sell watches?
No, we don't want to sell watches. Not now, not in the future. And you can get very profitable by the subscription alone.
Yeah, okay.
And it's reasonable calculations. It's not anything crazy. By the way, something that we might do in the future, but that's not compromising objectivity or anything like that, is to offer maybe a service where using data will tell you, you want to sell your watch? Okay, this is the data that tells you where you have the best chances to make the most money out of, you know, and then the auction houses will come and give you, let's say, an offer within a certain amount of time. And so just like, let's say, insurance, you know, you have those platforms that they give you like few options. And so, but give the client, the user, completely, like complete freedom to just decide what to do. So we just give you the data and we say, okay, we advise to go with this one.
Yeah.
But here are your offers and
moneysupermarket.com or something like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because I was just thinking in my head, wow, this app is so good for buyers. But what if I'm sick of my watch and I want to sell it? And if you tell me now, go and make a list of all the auction houses and email them separately, I'm like, oh, just never mind.
Yeah. But yeah, I can save you a lot of work there, Giovanni. You just want to send it to Philips. I'm joking, everyone. I'm not joking, but it's a joke, okay?
We'll make a Daniel chatbot. Everything will go through you.
Yeah. But I was also thinking, Dan, just now, I wanted to say, me and Dan get a lot of messages when people are like, hey, which one do you think will go up in value? What should I buy? We can just copy and paste the link in the future.
And be I would like, love that.
Yeah. And we no longer have to answer people.
Please.
Yeah.
Right. Last question on the main interview. What is there left to do? You know, obviously you've launched 4 months. You've probably seen some problems. What are those immediate things that you want to get changed to basically get to where you think you want to be?
Oh, we have so much to do, really. I feel like it's only the beginning and we have more than 2 years of roadmap of things, very exciting things that we want to do.
You're going on holiday.
Come on. But on a serious note, I think, you know, the future is bright and we have really exciting plans on very cool features and products that we want to build. And so, yeah, stay tuned. But I'm very excited for the future.
Well, I'm definitely going to play with it for the next few months because I think it's potentially, you know, without actually playing it, potentially a very powerful tool if executed really well. So I'm really excited to see. Yeah. Okay. Well, as you know, as a listener, we are on the reverso round. So Giovanni, one question each, one for me, one for Lung. Shoot.
So I have a common question, more direct question. It's actually kind of a game that I thought about would be fun. So I will give you a budget and I would like you to tell me, each of you, what would you buy today with the budget is $1 million. And by the end of the year, so after we're done with all the auction, the two seasons of auctions, we'll review your choices and see who did best.
All right.
Are we supposed to? Oh, well, come on. Just I'll get
$1 million. Is that what we've got?
At a 2000%.
You've just sold the $24.99 to us.
Well, like, we also wear it anyways because this money is free. So I will get the fourth series, the $24.99. And then I will, with my very limited budget, I will get a 500, the 5004.
You think you can get those?
No, but
I think you're over budget.
Yeah, I'm over budget. I know.
What's the time gap on appreciation?
Till the end of the year. So
end of the year.
The two auction seasons, let's say. We can make it fun. We could make it a year.
Can we actually have access to the watch? Like even the modern ones? Can we get it? Like realistically, can I walk in and just get? Oh,
yes.
Oh,
Let's leave the $24.99 aside. Come on, we all know it's $3 million.
Okay, then, Dan, you go first.
This has just come to my mind, right? Literally in like 5 minutes or two seconds.
Yeah.
What about the, if you could get the Rainbow Aquanaut? The full one, right, that is blinged out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really interested to see, because it's never come to market on the transaction, right, what that secondary price would be. I think it would be crazy. So it's hard to say because I don't think it's going to come up like at the MSC, but I think something like that would blow. Like,
isn't the retail over $1 million?
Is that over $1 million? Am I out of budget already?
I think so. I think it's 1.2 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't want to say.
You lost the game.
One budget.
We think like watch collectors. We just want to use all of the budget.
Yeah, then just pick up 3 RMs. We just have to wait 1 year, you know?
Yeah. RM is pretty strong if you buy it retail.
If you buy it, some of the current
how the economy is going, it's probably safe to just stick to like 5711, right? Just buy
the green dial,
buy like 10 of those or something. Do a bundle, maybe you get more like 15.
Sorry,
my argument is that the economy as it is, it's going to kind of be a bit difficult to predict like pieces that are actually going to, well, I think pieces are actually going to drop, right? But the core and maybe some independents, I guess, may go up. Yeah. So,
but the reason why, like, because we're just, the game is to overall make more profit at the end of the year. So even if you get RM and you're selling it at like not your ideal price, you're still making a huge profit and the dealers will still have to pick it up from you. Yeah. But the independence to convince the dealers to pick it up from you is tough.
The thing is the question doesn't factor in liquidity as well, right? Because like,
this game is so stressful.
You could like, because not all watches, they might trade price, but they're not as liquid.
Yeah. But isn't Philip so willing to take them?
Yeah, like just like could take But the thing with Philips, right? You can only take one. So if I had like 15, 57, 11, it's useless, you know?
Okay, let's be okay. So my answer is still the same. I will pick up a few RMs.
Okay.
I don't know. I think maybe RM, right? They are trading what? Double? More than double? So that's pretty
just
strong.
Under double. Just
yeah,
under double.
A pretty strong argument.
But let's make it real. Only
okay.
Secondary.
Well, we can buy in the secondary market and we have 1 mil.
Yeah.
I feel sick. Secondary market, 1 mil. That's really, really hard.
The 5204 earlier. I think that's a good pick.
But that's already so, like,
I don't think that's
so
going to go up.
Expensive. Yeah, it's a long wait.
Yeah, I think I do think that's underappreciated, but I don't think it's going to go up like in the half a year.
This is so sad.
Hmm.
Can you also be part of this game so I know?
Fine.
Yeah.
You've got the data though, haven't you?
Yeah, but that's why I want to know what he's going to say. So
yeah. Give us the data. Yeah. We've finished the game now.
All right, I would go with a 3970.
Okay. Which metal?
I would go with a yellow gold, either first or second series. First series is a bit expensive. Maybe second.
Okay, we're not allowed to. Okay, fine. We are. I was like, we're not allowed to choose first series. Okay, fine. And then.
Good.
Okay, so 3970J. I was gonna ask. What is that price? What on your system? What is it trading at? What's the market price?
Let me check.
It should be 100+. I don't think it's moved that much. I think the 3940 has moved way more.
It has been on.
We should have you on like every show on standby when people talk about prices, Giovanni. Then we go, hey, Giovanni. He can
no,
be.
No, but do you know what the good thing is? You now have access to him, so you can call him.
Yeah,
or you can use him.
No, we prefer to call.
Fine, I'll be available.
Yeah.
I haven't found the other gold one yet. One sec.
Does the app has a chat? I was like, the app should have the. Oh yeah, the app has the chat with them kind of function.
So median is 132 US.
Yeah.
In the past year.
Okay.
All right. So I've got.
Okay,
what is the medium for 3940?
In yellow gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, one sec.
Should be about 60, I think.
It's 49.
49? Ooh.
Yeah. And actually the latest sales price in December was 44.
Yeah.
So
whoa.
I love that. I mean, your app sounding so cool that you can actually be so specific about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel somewhat comforted. I mean, having without doing it, that you have to go on an app and press a button rather than you just saying it. 44, you know. Right. Okay. We're going to go on to the pump push around now, Giovanni.
Yeah.
Ready? Who's your favorite celebrity crush?
It's his wife standing close by.
Yep.
No, she's not, but. I believe she's not acting anymore, but when I was a kid, there was an actress that was featured in many Italian movies. She's not Italian. And she used to be the representative for Vodafone spots. And she's Megan Gale.
Right. Okay. Gonna have to research that one.
Oh, yeah. She's really pretty. Wow.
Okay.
Dan, do you want to see?
Yeah, go on. Okay. Right.
Okay. No comment.
Two.
Yes.
Sardinia. Sardinia. Tell me something that we don't know about Sardinia, which is where you're from.
Yeah. So there's ruins of some of the oldest civilization in the world in Sardinia. So it's one of the first civilization in the world, and everybody knows it for its sea, beautiful beaches and all of that. But actually the inner part, and there's like actually a canyon, and there's a lot of hiking that you can do. And we're famous for the fish, of course. Even the Japanese come and take tuna from us. It's probably some of the best in the world. However, all the meat part that's been done in the inner land, it's actually really good. So food is amazing.
Wait, why are you not mentioning what you said to us before we started recording? That you guys are like known for tan skin and dark features and, you know.
Yeah. And people are short usually, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Short, I would say shorter than national average, and dark traits and olive skin.
Okay.
Okay. Number three, tell us something about Italian food that we don't already know.
So in Sardinia, there is a type of cheese, which is literally called rotten cheese. It's now illegal, but it's still being produced. Let's not say too much out loud. That actually has little worms. They're very tiny, but they move. They're alive.
I've seen the videos. It just, oh my God. Thinking about it, I feel.
And people go crazy for it. That's the that's the
expensive.
Yes.
Really? Okay. Have you tried it? Is it good?
I did, and it's good, I have to say.
Right. Okay. Well, with the worms.
With the worms. Yeah. They're very small. Like, don't think like you're.
So they're like maggots.
Crunchy worm or something.
You can definitely see the worms, by the way.
Don't look at the worms like literally X-ray vision. You know.
They're not that animal, I would say. You have to see it in real.
The most prized, your most prized possession.
Oh, good question. I have it here, actually. Shout out to Andrea from Monaco Legend Group.
Oh my God.
There it is. It's a date just from the 70s that my grandpa used to wear and eventually got his way to me. And
it's so cool.
And I still have box and papers, and the papers are signed with his name. So I would say that's very special.
So yeah, that's really, really nice.
So how old is that watch?
It's from 77.
Okay.
16013. It's the reference.
Wow. Okay. Very nice. Next one. An experience that you had as a child that you think was invaluable to you as an adult.
That's deep.
Yeah, it can be quite deep.
Do I have to be very specific on one experience particularly, or can I just be a little
answer how you want? It's okay. I'm not going to hold you to it.
I would say that I was fortunate enough that my parents are very passionate about traveling, and they've always brought me along ever since I was young. So I've had the pleasure and great experiences to see many places in the world, even, you know, within Europe and outside. So I would say that's, you know, experiencing new cultures and seeing new places that are completely different, I think really is extremely valuable.
I would agree with that one. Yeah.
Very cool.
Number six, one thing off your bucket list.
That I've done or that I want to check?
That you want to check.
Unicorn status.
Oh, wow. You've put it there. You said it on the podcast.
Let's see it. Hold me accountable.
Okay, I will.
I do with myself already. So
I hope that we are friends when you are unicorn status. All right, last one. Your best pickup line.
I don't need that anymore.
He was gonna say that, and when he was like naming the prices of the watch, I was just thinking, man, imagine going on a date with a guy and the guy is trying to show off like his knowledge on like prices of watches.
Weird flex.
Yeah.
Okay, Jumani, that ends the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for introducing your platform. I'm very excited to start using it. So yeah, and all the best.
Yeah, thank you. It's very cool.
Okay.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me, and all the best to you guys as well.
Okay, we'll catch you soon. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye.
As always, thank you for listening to the Waiting List Podcast.
We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. And if you have any questions,
comments,
or feedback,
feel free to reach out to us at the Waiting List Podcast on Instagram or via our private accounts.
We'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
Bye.